Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning again, everyone. Bernie Sanders coming up in a half hour. Each day this week on Morning Edition, we have a series called Dear President, featuring essays by Black American thinkers. And then we're talking about the essays here. With me now is Damon Young, editor-in-chief of the website VerySmartBrothers.com. His essay this morning describes the experience of having to wonder constantly how much racial prejudice plays a role in other people's day-to-day interactions with you. And he describes how it leaves him in this perpetual state of wondering as a neurosis. Damon, welcome to WNYC at this time of day. Thanks so much for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
And the name of the essay is N-word neurosis, except you use a form of the actual word in your essay that I'd rather not say personally. Can you describe this neurosis for us? And do you want to say a word for any other people who may have reacted about why you wanted to say the N-word on the radio?
That word, and I'm not sure if I'm able to say it here, so I won't. But, you know, I know that there's a lot of conversation, even amongst Black people, regarding whether or not it's appropriate to say that word. And I think that obviously words have power, and a word like that has an explosive and, you know, a very complex historical legacy in this country. But, you know, I think that language is we will language the way we want to. And the N-word is a word that I don't use frequently, but I use it when it's appropriate. And it's a word that I treat, I guess, the same way I would treat a profanity, where I'm not saying the F-word or anything like that around my parents or around my you know, my niece or my nephew or even my mother-in-law or anything like that. But if I'm around people I'm familiar with and I'm around people who I know aren't offended by that word, then I might slip it in conversation. And I look at the N-word the same way, where it's not necessarily something that I just pepper all of my conversations with, but it is something that if I want to make a very specific point or if I'm very aware of the audience that I'm speaking to, then I don't have a problem using it.
Okay. Thank you for that as prelude. Now, can you describe this neurosis for people who didn't hear the piece this morning? And maybe describe the interaction that's in the essay with a white retired firefighter in which you experienced this neurosis.
Yeah. What it describes is just, you know, it's just this perpetual state of being where you exist and you have these interactions and you you just wonder how race is clouding the interaction, how it's affecting the interaction, how, you know, if being Black has had any effect on the way that you were, the way that you were treated, the way that you're regarded, the way that the person who's treating and regarding you is thinking about you. And again, it's not something that is paralyzing. I mean, you still do your day-to-day things. You still exist. You're not, you know, you're not preventing yourself from doing most things because this thing exists in your head. But it is something that does come up from time to time. And the example I brought up in the essay was something that happened a couple of weeks ago where I was parking my car. And I live in a neighborhood where there's a fire hydrant very close to my house, and also very close to my house is a bar. And someone was standing in front of the bar, a white man who identified himself as a retired firefighter, who told me through my car window that I should back up. And instead of being 7 feet from the hydrant, I should be 15 feet away from the hydrant. And he said it in a way that wasn't the most polite. I mean, he wasn't a complete a-hole, but it was like, okay, I hear you. And so that type of interaction, you know, and I think to myself, well, if I were a 50-year-old white guy, would he have responded to me the same way? And also, too, I think to myself, okay, well, so there's this guy. He's asking me to do this thing, and he's technically right. But I don't know if I quite appreciate the way he is engaging me. So if I
And you wonder if you were a white guy where everything else was the same. You were parked there, and you had a kid, I think you said, strapped in a car seat.
Yeah, my daughter was in the back seat. Yeah.
Would you have gotten the same admonition and in the same way?
Yeah, and the thing is, I don't know. And that's where the neurosis comes in. It's like, well, maybe he would have treated a white guy this exact same way. Maybe you know, my race or whatever didn't have anything to do with it. And again, just because a white person happens to act this way towards a black doesn't mean that they're like outwardly racist or outwardly trying to, you know, okay, there's this black guy there. I'm gonna make sure to do this because there's this black guy there. I mean, a lot of times, you know, just these little minor things happen subconsciously. And they're things that you pick up on because they, you know, as a person of color, it happens to you quite frequently. I mean, there's, you know, another way to describe it, I guess, is a microaggression.
Uh-huh. And that's kind of the point, right, is that you're living with this not knowing constantly. So the essay progresses into a cascade of internal questions. Not only would this have happened if I were not black, but also what if I just ignored him? Or what if we started arguing? Or if the police came, would they believe me differently than somebody else? So a lot of alternative scenarios going through your mind, and it probably hampers kind of living in the moment.
Yeah. Yeah, it I mean, I won't say that it hampers it, but it's – again, it's one of those things where it's just so – you're just so used to doing it that it's I don't know. It becomes mundane because it – you know, I don't remember a time where I wasn't this way, where I didn't have these thoughts. You know, as long as I remember being cognizant of race and I guess the context, the historical and current context of race in this country, I've always been aware of this neurosis. I've always possessed it, and I know that I'm not unique with this possession.
So this is surely resonating for many folks, because this surely is not unique, as Damon Young says, talking about his Morning Edition essay, which maybe some of you heard in the series this week, Dear President. Anybody want to call in and tell us about the last time you had an interaction with a person and thought, are they treating me worse because I'm black, or having to live with that question constantly? Take us through your mental process and share it with Damon Young, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. Have you ever, during an interaction like this, been tempted to say or actually said, wait, how is my race informing how you're approaching this conversation? Or is that never productive?
Like, I've never outright said that, but I have responded in a way that would imply that. There have been times, and again, it just depends on when you catch me or whether or not I've used my, as I said in a piece, I feel like I have like a certain quota of of racial confrontations per month, and if I've used up my quota, then you know it's like, you know what, it's I already used up my quota for November, so if this would happen in December, maybe I would have said something. So it depends on when you when it happens and in the circumstances surrounding it. Sometimes I just like, you know what, this is just what's happening right now. And sometimes I will respond. Like there are times when you know, you walk into a department store and someone may be following you around, you know, one of the people who's working there. And again, this is something that you don't know if this is happening because you're black or if this is just how they treat everyone. But, you know, and there are days when maybe you give that person more of a benefit of the doubt. Sometimes there are days when you don't give them the benefit of the doubt, but you don't really feel like making a scene in a store. And then there are days when you don't really give a damn about making a scene because it just needs to happen then.
Alan in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC with Damon Young. Hi, Alan. Thanks for calling.
Hi, first-time caller, great listener. I can definitely relate, and I actually wrote it down on a sticky about walking in stores. I can completely understand, and sometimes just putting your hands in your pocket, you're thinking, is this the right thing to do? You know, anyone else could do it, and you can as being a black professional engineer. One of the things I can definitely relate to is recent travels give you three specific incidents that happened just in an incident going into an airport. Business traveler, go up to the TSA, first gate check to TSA entry, show your phone, and they automatically swear you off to this other line. Because, no, you're not a frequent traveler. You're in the regular line. They don't even realize that you may be global entry or TSA pre-check. That was number one. Number two, I have status with all this traveling that I do. Go in, try to get an earlier flight. Normally, they don't charge you as a status flyer for changing an earlier flight. First thing out of the lady's mouth, hey, do you know that's going to cost you $250? Did you even mind to even look at this phone that I'm showing you that shows that I have platinum status? It's American, happens to be the airline that I travel on. They don't charge you for changing your flight. That was number two. Third, I went to get a little snack, got a sandwich, got a bottle of water. As we all know, once you go through security, they got you inside, but the bottle of water is very expensive. $4 bottle of water, have my American Express corporate card out. The lady proceeds to tell me, do you know how much that water cost? Hmm. Person right before, nothing like that ever happened. You start internalizing it and you go, wait a minute. What, you know, and literally you just get that neurosis. And as I'm getting older, grew up in New York City, never really had that problem. As you're getting older, you start realizing this more and more. You don't know if it's you're just cognizant or what's happening, but very, very strange. So I completely empathize with you and know exactly what you're talking about.
Damon, you want to talk to Alan?
Yeah, I mean, those are all great examples. You know, I could cite examples too. I do a lot of traveling, with work, and you know, just different instances of just being treated in a way where the part that makes it so that produces so much anxiety sometimes with it is that you don't know. Like maybe if you definitely 100% knew, like, okay, this person, like if there was a billboard that announced, okay, this is when you're going to be treated this way because you're black, it would, you know, it would be, a little bit more reassuring. But when these things happen and there's this seed of doubt in your mind that, you know what, maybe, like, I'm 99% sure that this happened because I'm black, but there's still that 0.0001% chance that it didn't. And that right there can, I won't say that it could drive you crazy, but it will definitely weigh on your mind and it could be fatiguing. Now, there's something I also want to say about this too, is that I wrote this essay about 3 weeks ago and I recorded it a couple weeks ago, mm-hmm. which was before this election.
Right.
And I wonder now if some of those interactions that, you know, we don't know if it's, you know, if our treatment is due to race, if people are going to be more emboldened to just come out and say, I'm treating you this way because you're black, or I'm totally, being racist and there's nothing you can do about it because the president is racist. So, you know, if I would have recorded this this week, I might have told a different story or might have given a different tone to the story that I told. But, a lot has changed.
And the series is called Dear President. So is there anything you would want to say to Donald Trump?
Resign.
Other than that, like about this?
You know what? I don't know there's anything I would really want to say to him. I would want to speak to people who are his supporters or people who don't necessarily believe the importance of race in his campaign. and the dog whistling and the, just the implicit bias, and not just racial bias, but, you know, misogyny and, you know, members of the LGBTQ community, you know, getting thrown under the bus. I mean, you could just go down the list of people who, marginalized people who this campaign has made an effort to, you know, continue to marginalize. And I would just ask the people who are supporting him to just pay attention to the things that he's saying and recognize that there are very many people in this country right now who, you know, they're not, we're not upset because the Democrats lost. We are genuinely worried about what this administration is capable of.
Tony in Westchester, you're on WNYC with Damon Young. Hi, Tony.
Hi, how are you?
Okay.
Hi.
So did you have a story you wanted to tell?
Sure. I'm not African American. I'm actually Indian. I was born in the United States, but I'm obviously brown.
Uh-huh.
And I'm an attorney. And I've done that for many, many years. And one instance that comes to mind that really resonates with me is that as a junior lawyer, you know, firms like 20 years ago did away with, you know, suits every day. So everyone could wear casual clothing, business casual. And I remember standing in the hallway of a law firm next to a white associate. We were both very junior, and we were wearing khakis and a shirt. And a partner comes out, and he says, he looks at the white associate, and he looks at me, and then he immediately turns to me, and he says, "Where are those copies that I asked for?" Assuming that I worked in the mailroom or the copy center, just because, in my view, given the choice between a white associate versus a dark guy, a darker guy, a brown guy, whatever you want to call it, that would be the obvious choice. And from that day on, I've worn a suit to work every day.
Huh.
Because it's ever-present, not having people confuse me for something that I'm not, even though I've earned it. It's that outward manifestation that you just – it's tiresome.
And one of the reasons that that's too bad is that it puts the burden on you.
Yes.
You've taken the burden on yourself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it manifests in so many ways. My wife and I, when we go, we'll go car shopping, right? I think about, before I leave the house, whether I should be wearing jeans and a sweatshirt, because there's an impression that I want to avoid. It's horrible to say it. I don't want to be treated as if I don't have the status that someone who, even if they have the same status and they're white, they can roll in and
right.
sort of unshaven jeans, and it's just assumed
right.
that if you're in X car dealership, you can afford it.
Right. It's another kind of white privilege. Damon, you're relating to this?
Oh, definitely. Definitely. And, you know, and that example of you know, going to a dealership and maybe overdressing or even going to a restaurant and over-tipping. Because you might be aware that certain stereotypes may exist, so you want to be the person who goes against the stereotype. It's almost like this performative, tipping or something.
Yeah,
and also, you know, within, you know, particularly within the black community, there's this this concept of respectability politics. Which is based off of a lot, you know, where there are certain black people who believe that, you know, if we act a certain way or we dress a certain way or we regard ourselves a certain way, then white people and white America are going to be more accepting of us. And again, that extends to television, that extends to music, that extends to just the way people dress and act in the street. And, you know, and so there's always like this internal battle and like this conversation that's never ending, where you wonder, okay, well, I just want to be me. I'm not going to wear a suit to go to the grocery store because I've been wearing sweats all day and I don't need to overdress. But at the same time, you do recognize that, you know what, if I were to wear the hoodie and the sweats and walk down the street and it's nighttime, then, you know, maybe I might get treated a way that I wouldn't get treated if I were wearing a suit.
Yeah.
But you don't want to give in to that societal pressure either. So you know,
right.
I guess you split the difference and wear some jeans. I don't know.
Yeah, right. And there again, you're always having to think about it and figure out where you come down on a particular day. We're just about out of time, but I just want to touch on the fact that you wrote an article called Why 13% of Black Men Voted for Donald Trump Explained. And I thought it was less than that, like 8%. But that's still more than for Romney. We had one last hour caller who said he'd rather trust the white supremacist to be in office because he at least knows where he stands than the white liberal. But how do you explain it?
Okay, so that piece, if people actually go and read that piece, it was written in jest. Now the latent point behind it was very sincere, but the language that I used and the way I made the point was I did use a bit of satire and some humor to do that. But my point that I was trying to make is that there are people who voted for Donald Trump. There are black people who voted for Trump. There are women, lots of white women who voted for Donald Trump. But in terms of just the black people who voted for Trump, the black men particularly, there's no excusing or explaining that. And I think that there are some people who are so hamstrung by misogyny or so hamstrung by wanting to be considered and wanting to be close to white people and wanting to be accepted by white people, and so hamstrung by certain parts of Christianity, where they're so against gay marriage, but they don't mind having premarital sex, and so you have all of that together, then you end up having people who can go last Tuesday and actually pull that lever and vote for Trump, a man who has been very clear with his disregard for people of color, for women, for gay and lesbians, for immigrants, for you just go down the line,
and
that's the basic gist of the piece.
And we leave it there with Damon Young, editor in chief of the website VSB, verysmartbrothers.com. The series Dear President continues with another essay on Morning Edition and another conversation on this program tomorrow. Damon, thank you so much.
Oh, thanks for having me. Thanks, Brian.